We'll pick up the countdown shortly here. In H-minus 10 seconds, the countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you A Step Farther Out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society.
So today is the 19th of February in the distant future year of 2022. That's according to the Gregorian calendar. If you're not using the Gregorian calendar, you might want to ask your friends what day it is. I have just now, as in a few moments ago, returned from having dinner with a member of Nuclearia, the German pro-nuclear organization. I was meeting up with him because he had a copy of a calendar that I wanted. Now, what was this calendar all about? The answer is, it was something that was come up with by the parish priest in Gundremmingen, Germany, where the nuclear power plant just closed. And although the company that owns the power plant, etc., did not have a special photographic calendar made up to commemorate their years of service or anything like that, the parish priest in Gundremmingen made one up. So, I found out that this one gentleman did have several copies, and I arranged to get him with... I arranged to get one from him, anyway, and we wound up meeting and eating dinner together at an Indian place, actually. It was quite good. Indian food isn't something I'm hugely conversant with, but it was quite good, anyway. But yes, I wrote some letters to the managers of some of the nuclear power stations that were closing, and got very vague and equivocal responses. You know, this is amazing. Since nuclear phase-out decision in Germany, our corporate communication strategy focuses on explaining what we do with our power plants in operation, decommissioning, and dismantling. We, corporate communications, do not comment or actively contribute to political discussions concerning the pros and cons of nuclear energy. The die is cast. Nuclear phase-out in Germany is a fact, and so we concentrate our communication efforts on what we are doing now and in future concerning our power plants. Unfortunately, we have no memorabilia, souvenirs, or other material to hand over for your plant traveling exhibit. Now, what did they do with all the stuff in their visitor center? Who knows? But suffice to say, even if the companies that own these plants are unwilling to tell the German people that, you know, what the value was of the things that they are throwing away, the people in the communities around these power plants don't necessarily feel like that. They feel like they've lost something important. Anyway, and so, as I said, the parish priest in Gundremmingen did make up a photo calendar, and I wanted to get a copy of that. Matter of fact, one of the other Nuclearia members is planning on having those calendars reprinted, and so I've put in for 3 copies of his reprint. But I figured getting one of the originals, and then I don't have to worry about it immediately. Anyway, but it's a lovely big calendar. Now, I'm going to follow along with a little bit more commentary about Germany. It's not the most useful or pleasant thing to talk about, to be perfectly honest, but I am going to go along with a little more commentary about Germany for a couple of reasons. So the federal finance minister was very pleased to announce that the amount of renewable energy subsidies was being reduced from something like 30 billion euros to something like 6 billion euros. Now, would you think that this is, why would you think that this is? You'd think, oh, well, you know, renewable energy is becoming more and more economical. Well, not really. The reason for this is that the wholesale price of electricity on the German market has gone up from 4 cents per kilowatt hour in 2020 to 15 cents today, nearly quadrupled. And so, of course, the difference between what the electricity producers can get for their electricity and the price that they are guaranteed is smaller. You know, just 2 years ago, that difference was so large that the federal finance minister decided, well, we're not going to have this added to consumer electricity bills the way we've been doing in the past. We're going to finance part of it out of the public budget, out of tax money, which, of course, you know, it's all being paid for by the general public one way or another, but so that's, you know, that's the situation. You know, the campaigners talking about, oh, well, renewable energy is so economical. Their campaign always saying, the sun doesn't send a bill. The wind doesn't send a bill. Yeah. Here's the thing. Wind turbines are quite expensive, and they are generally financed capitalistically. They're produced capitalistically, which means that the people who pay for them to be installed expect to be paid back. That's kind of a fact of life. And so saying, oh, the sun doesn't send a bill, the wind doesn't send a bill, well, that's a bit dishonest. But of course, if you've listened to this program for any length of time, you know already that I consider much of what these people say to be dishonest. Now, you know, if you've listened to this long enough, you know some of my opinions. Why am I continuing to talk about this, other than the fact that I'm in Germany right now? You know, I'm here staying with friends, and I'm worried about how it's going to affect my friends as things continue to get worse and worse. Well, part of the answer is that Germany presents itself as a model to the world, saying, you know, follow our example. This is the best. You know, this is what you need to be doing. Well, as you may have noticed, I don't necessarily believe that. Beyond that, what else do I have to say? Well, one of the interesting aspects, interesting may be a word, one of the interesting aspects of the whole situation is undoubtedly this HPC PSEA system, which is now saying, oh, well, you can have your whole house be solar powered, solar plus storage. And yeah, the system is, as I understand it, as it's reported in the newspapers, cost 85,000 euros. 85,000 euros, kind of a lot of money, right? for a single-family home, of which the federal government will pick up $35,000. Now, I've said again and again that there are things that just are not solutions for the whole world. And the 85,000 euro energy system, I would argue, is an example of what's not a solution for the whole world. But to be clear, that's only, right, 85,000 euros, and that's for your household. Of course, a significant amount of the energy you consume is not in your household. But let's actually look at the details of this system and try to find out a little more about it. I downloaded their data sheets. I had a look at them. The whole idea, of course, they offer them in both a network or grid independent and also a grid parallel configuration. A grid parallel is, again, one of those things where you can make money off of your neighbors, essentially. You know, charge your neighbors for the cost of the stuff you put on your house. Now, most Germans don't live in single-family houses. That's worth pointing out. Lots of Germans live in apartment complexes. As a system, it would be far less appropriate for that kind of situation. But let's look at it for a minute. So there's a 20 kilowatt hour battery, which is supposed to move you over sort of to do the day-to-day balancing. And then anything that's not needed to charge the 20 kilowatt hour battery goes into electrolyzing hydrogen and compressing it into cylinders. Now, they have two different sizes of cylinder bank. The XL stores, as it says, usable energy, 300 kilowatt hours of electricity. And then you can have 1 to 5 cylinder banks attached to the system. I don't know why there's a limitation of 5. It's not my engineering, so I'm not going to worry about it. Now, let's do it up to 5. So that would be 1,500 kilowatt hours of electricity. Now, what do we know about this kind of situation, right? What can we work out from mathematics? Okay, so let's do a little math here. So the average per capita consumption of electricity in Germany is 6,848 kilowatt hours a year. Now, we can assume if Germany is typical, we can assume typically say, let's say 40% of that is actually in the home. So times 0.4 is 2,739 kilowatt hours. So I've got a book which sort of goes over what you need to store if you're actually going to do a solar-based energy system at various latitudes. And the thing is, it lumps together sort of day-to-day storage and month-to-month sort of storage. So the figures are, you know, it gives like 60%. We'll say 40%. Let's say you need to store, because there are long stretches of days in the winter in most parts of Germany. I mean, firstly, there's no part of Germany that has more than about 1,800 hours of sunlight a year, period. You know, that's in the sunny areas. Hilariously, one of the sunniest spots is a place called Regensburg, Rain Town. No accounting for a sense of humor, right? Anyway, but much of Germany just doesn't get that much sunlight. So, but it's at least fair to say you've got to be able to store long-term something like 40% of your annual energy needs, simply because in a cold climate, your main use of energy is in the winter. So we'll multiply that again by times 0.4, and we get 1,095 kilowatt hours. Okay, but that would be for one person. And so in a household which is going to invest in one of these things, you know, you could easily multiply that by 4. Let's just multiply by 3. Let's just assume there's 3 people in this household who are buying this 85,000 euro total energy system. They're going to need 3,300 kilowatt hours to make it through the winter, unless they are consuming radically less energy than the average German, I think, right? Maybe I'm wrong, but it looks like even the most expensive version of this system, the one which is tricked out with 5 extra large cylinder banks, is still going to only store about half of the electricity. And it's supposed to be a total energy solution. They say, oh, well, it takes the waste heat and this and that and the other thing. Well, I'm not convinced because, among other things, it talks about the temperature of the hot water it puts out, 50 degrees C. 50 degrees C is not actually that great for hot water, particularly when you're using it for heating. Most heating systems will want something like 80 degrees C. So are you going to have to rip out all your heating system and install new? I'm not sure. And 50 degrees C is maybe warm enough for domestic hot water, maybe warm enough for warm water heating, but you're kind of cutting it close. And again, they say, well, this is the waste heat energy. Well, I don't know what kind of fuel cells they're using. Maybe if they're using molten caustic soda fuel cells, the kind that were used back in the Apollo days, maybe that makes some sense, because those get hot enough you can actually generate steam. But if they're using proton exchange membrane fuel cells, those are fairly efficient. They don't produce a lot of waste heat. So again, as a total energy solution, it looks inadequate. And again, it's way, way overpriced for a solution to serve an entire country. And that's before we get into talking about actual energy needs. Because as it turns out, the German chemical industry, for example, they're talking about how much energy they need to stop using fuel for the various chemical processes that they do, right? Manufacturing fertilizer and dye stuffs and this and that and the third thing. Well, their figures are something like they want as much electricity as all of German electricity generation today. That's a lot. I mean, that's a lot. Where's it going to come from? It's certainly not going to come from home solar. So I worry about this. I also worry about people who say, oh, we should just use less energy, because that just there covereth a multitude of sins. Again, I'm going to give you some math, but it's all very straightforward math. Basically, if you look at the IEA Key World Statistics, that's sort of the standard publication for this, that and the one from British Petroleum. But if you look at compendia of energy statistics which are being put out, you could say, okay, well, if we were to levelize the entire world at an energy consumption equal to the average for the European Union, we would have to double world energy production. Double it. Now, surely we're not going to try and support that on fossil fuels. Now, you're asking a question, right? You're saying, well, what about this EU average? Well, of course it is a great deal higher figure.
Thank you, Lars.
Of course it's a great deal higher figure than many people in the world enjoy today. Because, to be blunt, what do we use energy for? So, fewer than one person in three in the world today, and if you can look at the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals about this, fewer than one person in three in the world today has regular access to chlorinated drinking water. Chlorinated drinking water being one of our most powerful weapons against pestilence. And the chloralkali process does consume a lot of electricity. Then, you know, how many people have access, regular, reliable access, to a washing machine? Now, you're going to ask me, well, what is the deal about washing machines? Well, the answer is washing machines are powerful weapons against both pestilence and ignorance, because unwashed clothes harbor vermin and vermin transmit disease. But women who have to spend all their time washing clothes, and if you've ever washed clothes by hand, you know how laborious it is. Women who have to spend all their time washing clothes don't read, and they don't teach their children to read. The laundry machine is a powerful weapon against both pestilence and ignorance. And fewer than one person in five in the world has access to those, and they're concentrated in the high-income, high-energy countries. Again, you look at a lot of things. You can ask yourself things like, how many people have weather-tight, vermin-proof houses to live in, right? How many people have weather-tight, vermin-proof housing? And the answer is, again, it's got to be fewer than one in five. Concrete, right? Cement takes energy to make. Steel takes energy to make. Glass takes energy to make. Bricks take energy to make. Now, I don't really know that reducing the higher income, you know, this is the thing. Again, levelize the entire world at the energy average of the EU. Well, people in Germany, for example, are going to have to use a great deal less energy than they do now, about half. People in the U.S. are going to have to use about a third as much energy as they do now, because the EU average includes countries like Bulgaria, which are not very wealthy and don't have high energy consumption. So the EU average is actually a good deal lower than the average energy consumption in countries like France or Germany, or even more than that, Norway or the USA. I've read to you energy consumption statistics, right? Now, it strikes me as being very difficult to actually strong-arm people into reducing their energy consumption in such large tranches without, say, military force. You know, the government in France tried to introduce a carbon tax, which is going to ratchet up the price of motor fuel, and you've got the Gilets Jaunes protests. I don't know why the Germans aren't out in the street protesting against 30 cent a kilowatt hour, 40 cent a kilowatt hour electricity, which is what it winds up being on the consumer level, partly because in an attempt to keep industry in Germany, the household consumer actually has to pay more in order to subsidize the big industrial consumers. Now, this is basically the opposite of how it normally works, right? And again, this is partly the result of trying to move away from large central station power generators. Large central station power generators have powerful economies of scale. And so the big industries get together and they finance a central power plant. This is literally how it works in Finland. Big industrial users get together, they finance a central power plant, which produces twice as much power as they need, but doesn't cost much more than one which would only produce as much power as they need. And then that extra power is available for everybody else. So yeah, normally, even though industrial users pay a lower price than the consumer user, right, the household user, even still, the industrial user is effectively subsidizing the use of electricity by households. But in the system that Germany is going towards, a distributed generation, small generators, and all that kind of thing, it's exactly the opposite way around. Consumers are actually charged a fee so that the price of electricity to big industrial users can be reduced. This is a big problem. All right, I don't know why there aren't riots in the streets the way that they had riots against nuclear power plants back in the 70s and 80s. Battles, open-pitched battles between protesters and police at places like Brockdorf and Gronde and Wühl. And I wonder, why? What brought about this? And here's my hypothesis, and it's not very flattering. I feel like the Germans... Many people in Germany felt a need to atone for or expiate the sin of the Holocaust and the Second World War by saving the world from something. But, of course, they couldn't do anything about the real threat to the world, which is the superpower confrontation, which, alas, seems to be coming back, God save us all. So instead they made up something that the world needed saving from. And what they forgot was, that's exactly what Hitler did. Hitler was trying to expiate the guilt of the First World War, right? When Germany was shelling churches and bayoneting nuns and things like that. He was trying to expiate that by coming up with something that Germany could save the world from. And so he just made something up, the horrible international Jewish conspiracy. Didn't exist. That didn't matter. The fact that it didn't exist was unimportant. The important thing was Germany could save the world from it, and that would be Germany's, you know, redemption from their sins of the past. Well, in the First World War, when they were shooting nuns and shelling churches and all that, what was the official line? Well, the official line then was that they were saving European Christian civilization. How you do that exactly? But they were following in the mold of the Teutonic Knights of old by preserving Western culture against the Russians, who were really just Asiatics, and the British and the French, who were contaminated and deracinated by all their colonialism, which brought them into intimate contact with the Asiatics and the Africans. And I'm not making this up. You might think I'm making this up, but you can look at German propaganda medals of the First World War at Karl Goetz. I'm a numismatist. Goetz made these medals, and most of them are really, really horrifying. The least horrifying was the one he got an enormous amount of bad press about, which was his medal on the sinking of the Lusitania, which basically brought out the fact that the German government had published advertisements in the New York newspapers saying, don't sail on the Lusitania, we consider it an armed merchant cruiser and it's subject to being sunk without warning by our submarines. And so it shows people, you know, queuing up to buy tickets from a skeleton and this kind of thing. And this got an enormous amount of bad press at the time. But the fact is, it's the least horrifying of his medals. He's got these medals which show the, you know, the features of, you know, King George of England morphed into those of an Indian, and the President of France morphed into an African, and it's just hideous. So yeah, I don't know why Germans feel the need to save the world, why they feel this messiah complex, but every time they've tried it, it's ended really badly, and I wish they would just stop. So instead, can we talk about how the James Webb Space Telescope is working? Can we talk about how the experiment on the new Mars rover to generate oxygen gas from the Martian atmosphere has actually worked? Can we talk about the Cygnus supply ship that went up to the International Space Station? Cygnus supply ship, Antares is the launch vehicle, that went up to the International Space Station today. Out of Wallops Island in Virginia. Can we talk about the Astra launch vehicle, rocket carrying various basically student experiments and so forth that failed last week just because space is hard, and also rocket engineers have a tendency to, there's a tendency to encounter the same problems over and over again because everybody wants to build a simpler rocket that's cheaper to use, and they get to a certain point and they find they've simplified out something that was put in there for a really good reason. So let's talk about that instead, maybe. On the other hand, I will mention, you know, if you want to use less energy, the best way is just to not buy a bunch of new stuff. Buy as much secondhand stuff as you can. Repair as much as you can, right? And they don't make it easy. You need standardization of consumer goods over a long period. You need things, you need widespread availability of repair parts, right? Because the thing is, even if we sold no new appliances in the wealthier countries, we make these appliances last forever. They cost about 50% more, and they'll last 30 years rather than 10, okay? The fact is, again, fewer than one person in five in the world has a washing machine or a dishwasher. There's plenty of market to sell into. You don't have to keep selling replacements to the same old people. I'm a little exercised about this because I tried to get a replacement pump for a pump-type soap bottle, and I can't seem to find one that fits, and it's really annoying because I dropped the thing in the bathtub and the pump broke off. I found a replacement pump, but it doesn't fit the bottle. Dang it! Anyway, but yeah, right-to-repair laws are sort of the first step in this, sort of the ground floor. The Japanese used to have a law requiring manufacturers to keep stocks of repair parts for a decade or so. All of these are really important things because, again, the single biggest waste of energy and other resources has got to be replacing things that don't need replacing because they still work, or they would still work if you could get that one flange that they don't stock anymore. Anyway... And that's one of the great things about makerspaces and machine shops is that sometimes you can actually make the part that you need. I'm big in favor of that. Anyway, you've been listening to Publius ranting on. The title of the show is A Step Farther Out. It airs on Anon Radio, which is a service of the SDF Public Access Unix System. Send your cards and letters to Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas, United States of America. 76101 is the zip code. And enjoy the...